This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Herding Code. Today we're talking about Windows 7, first impressions and just operating systems in general and excitement. So first of all, have you guys installed this Windows 7 thing?
I installed it into a VM. I haven't installed it directly on the bare metal, but I have had a chance to play around with a little bit on a VM, which of course means no glass, so it doesn't look quite as pretty, but it still seems to work pretty well.
I installed it in Virtual PC, didn't have any problems, and I actually think it's I only gave it 512 megabytes of memory, and it actually seems to be working pretty well. Of course, there's nothing really installed in it. I'm actually downloading Visual C Sharp Expression Edition to install, just, I don't know, because I haven't played with an Express Edition since, well, I never have before.
It sounded so, like you were inventing a new Visual C Sharp Plus Expression Edition, which I think might be interesting.
Yeah, my words tend to all blur together sometimes.
Well, I'm just thinking the expression and C++ might merge together in a really interesting way. Not a good one.
That's true. Well, the one thing I noticed when I was downloading the Express edition of Visual C Sharp, there's actually a prompt in the setup to go ahead and install the Silverlight runtime.
Yeah.
Which I don't think the developer tools are installed, but Silverlight runtime comes down anyway.
It looks like Silverlight is not in Windows 7, but it's pushed along with a lot of things that you'll get with Windows 7. Like, for instance, Windows 7 doesn't have a lot of the basic things they had before, like a photo viewer or a mail application or stuff like that. And instead, they push you to get the Windows Live stuff, and that comes with the photo gallery and the mail application and the blogging client and all that, and Windows Messenger. And then, or Windows Live Messenger, or whatever it's called. And then along with that, they also push Silverlight, or, it's a recommended install. So, I don't know.
What do you guys think of the decision to exclude, those sort of basic apps that used to be in the operating system? You think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a bad thing. I guess the argument used to be that Microsoft could get into antitrust problems if they put too much stuff in the operating system. But I think these days that isn't so much of an argument. I think it would be easy for Microsoft to say, look, our market share in the browser's eroding. Apple's obviously doing well. We should be free to put some more things in the operating system, like some basic virus checking, a Silverlight runtime, media players, email clients.
So we never do this, and so this is maybe a first on Herding Code, but I'm going to disagree with you because...
Awesome.
Well, because, I understand from one side of it, the out-of-the-box experience is something we all begged on Windows kind of forever. It's like it's not a good... You get it and install it, and it's a great operating system. But on the other hand, one benefit of this is that you'll always, when you get Windows Live, you'll get the latest of the Windows Live stuff. And there's also, hopefully this will let them be a little bit more agile about what they push out. Because before, everything had to be so perfectly, tested to work. It's just like, what ships on the Windows DVD had to be just perfect. And, or for as far as, it had to all work so perfectly. I don't know, just like the way in which everything had to work together was good, but it wasn't good in a way that kept up with Google or everybody else. And so I'm thinking that, with this live apps, they can push stuff out, and then, if there's a bug, they can push something else out the next day. I mean, that's the extreme, but I'm just saying it's a lot more of an agile way of pushing out applications. And then I think also for most people, they're going to go out and they're going to buy a Dell or an HP or whatever, and it's going to already have the Windows Live stuff installed. From what I've been hearing, that's kind of like the deal. Instead of installing a bunch of crapware stuff, they're trying to get the computer vendors to just sell computers with Windows Live stuff. So you don't have to get the HP Photo Manager Plus you know, whatever application or Nero, whatever. It's just like it's you get Windows, you get Windows Live, and that's like a workable operating system. So
they bundle in Microsoft crapware instead of other people's crapware?
Well, yeah, but hopefully, I mean, I actually kind of like most of the Windows Live stuff lately. I mean, like Windows Live Writer has I guess kind of, you know, got me into it. The photo gallery is pretty decent. It's kind of along the lines of like a stripped down Picasa. So, I mean, it's actual like usable software. I wouldn't say that it's awesome, but I really don't have any big complaints with it as far as like something I'd, you know, put on my wife's or my mom's computer or something. So, and it's definitely better than most. I mean, the crapware that ships with like Dell or HP or any of these big box computers is just awful. I mean, it's just horrible. You know, it's stuff that's obviously written by I don't know. I mean,
hacks.
It's just really bad. And it's frustrating too. Like, you know, my dad gets a new computer and like he fought me for a long time on uninstalling this HP Photo Manage whatever pro thing. And I'm like, Dad, this stuff is not good. This, like, they're not giving you a bargain with this. This is like to upsell something or whatever, but it's not good software. So that's my take. I think that it's good that they're stripping it down. And one of the things with that is that's part of why it'll run on tiny computers. It installs really quick and everything because it's just a lean core.
Yeah, I agree that it does seem to be more about decoupling the release schedule of Windows, which is very, very long and very, you know, with big gaps in between, and, you know, these other apps. Whether that's a good thing because it means that, you know, it just takes them forever to get out a Windows release, and there's so much testing involved that, you know, it's not like Mac where they release a new version of the operating system every year. So that's, I mean, it's kind of a bad thing in the sense that they're not moving to a faster release schedule, but a good thing in the sense that at least they're going to be able to update these apps more frequently. And like one of the things I think you're talking about, John, is that, you know, they can push out an English version without, you know, of the new Windows Live Writer without having to wait for it to be localized in 47 languages like it does for Windows. I mean, just like they don't have to pay the Windows tax quite as much, you know, and they can iterate a little faster on those apps.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I think the Mac has that the Windows doesn't have that really hurts it is the photo management application. You know, I've seen this sort of plethora of total crap photo managers that come from every digital camera maker, half of the stupid printer manufacturers, and, you know, there's no sort of standard one that comes with the operating system, and I think that's kind of hurt, you know, Windows from that perspective. Like, there should just be one app that, you know, everybody gets and does what you need and can, you know, pull down pictures off the camera, and they don't have to think about it anymore. Aside from that, I'm fine with them unbundling everything. I still don't really know why Windows Live Writer is sort of considered an essential. I think I've commented on that before. But it is a great application, and I'm glad they're doing it. You know, obviously email is pretty key, although more people are moving to webmail anyway, so maybe it's not as important as it once was.
Yeah, people have kind of remarked on that. There's kind of a weird spot there where you have like a you can burn an ISO, but you can't write a movie, and you know there's kind of a weird mix of what you can do. And they do have Windows Live Photo Gallery, which is, from what I've seen so far on it, is pretty decent. But I agree, it's kind of strange that that's not in the base install. They at least do a better job, I think, with pushing. Like before, they always had this Windows Marketplace, which was kind of the idea was, it seems like, was supposed to be, it was a gateway to, you know, like, okay, welcome to your computer, now get some software. But I don't know anyone that really actually used it all that much. I hear the numbers, you know, millions of people did use it, but I never did, and nobody I knew ever seemed to know about it. But they seem to push this Windows Live install after installing Windows 7, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I've certainly never used it, this whole Windows Marketplace thing.
I think it's kind of interesting, you know, like just the name Windows Marketplace, like the idea goes back to, you know, the, I don't know, early 90s or whatever model where it was, you know, you had a marketplace of ISVs that sold software and, you know, you'd go and kind of, you'd buy your system and you'd cobble together a bunch of $20 or $30 apps. And I mean, I guess that still kind of works, but there's a lot of things where people just expect, you know, that you're going to get, I don't know. It just seems kind of like marketplace is not something, it doesn't have the same kind of feel that you have, even like in, you know, iTunes or, you know, the iWorld. Well, so I actually installed this on bare metal. I lucked myself into a laptop, and it's 64-bit capable. And so as a replacement to my aging Vista laptop, this one, I've got Windows 7 64-bit. And, I mean, everything's really been pretty smooth with it. I've you know, dabbled with 64-bit along the way with XP and a little with Vista, and I've always kind of been bit by drivers and difficulties, but so far everything's really been pretty smooth with this. And I've been pretty happy with the driver support. One thing that's been frustrating has been the lack of an ISO mounter. I finally today found one. It was recommended Power ISO, but other than that, you can burn an ISO. You double click on an ISO file and it'll burn burn to a disk. But you can't mount an ISO, which is strange because the MSDN subscriptions are mostly ISO downloads. So it's just kind of a weird spot. I kind of wish that Microsoft would just license Power ISO or whatever and just, you know, be done with it, because I think that people are going to, you know, it's weird that you can burn ISOs and not mount them, and you can create and mount VHD files, which most people don't really do all that much. So anyhow, I think that's my one kind of thing that's bugged me about it. You guys have anything that have bugged you so far?
Okay, well, how about we take a different tack? Let's sort of break it down from the out-of-box experience. How did you find the install? I personally was really impressed with the install. It was like minimal questions were answered. It did its thing, and it finished really quickly. It was hands down the easiest Windows install I've ever done. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I agree.
It was slick.
Yeah. Go ahead, Scott, because I've been talking a lot.
It was slick, and it just seemed to have a fine attention to detail, just little things that would happen. The little animations were kind of neat, which, you know, don't increase my productivity at all, but it certainly felt a little more refined than previous versions of Windows.
Yeah, I agree. I through stupidity, you know, first, I've installed it several times. I'll just leave it at that. You know, installing first, I wanted to do 64-bit, and then I downloaded the 32-bit, and I downloaded the wrong one because I'm beta testing a different one, and so I've installed it over and over and over, and I've been really pretty happy. It's quick install, and it's not a bunch of reboots and weird errors. So that's been pretty nice. So out of the box, I think is a pretty smooth experience. I think I forget how long it took, maybe half hour, something like that, 20 minutes? Half hour, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, so it was something like that for me, too. Okay, so the first thing you notice when you drop into it after the install is the changes to Explorer and the taskbar. So what's your take on that? Do you like the changes? Really weird? I mean, it's really kind of, in some ways, the biggest change to the start menu of the taskbar since Windows 95.
A good place to get an idea of all the changes that they've made to the desktop and Explorer is if you go to Tim Sneath's blog. And he's got all kinds of things. Like, for instance, you can dock the taskbar on the left, right, top, or bottom. And it actually works. Like, if you tried doing that before, it never really kind of worked all that well. And it actually works pretty nicely here. Like, the way that they've designed the taskbar, it works nicely on the side. So, I mean, there's a lot of kind of big changes. It's also designed to be a lot more navigable. So I kind of like that, you know, before it was always like in Vista, we have this peer-to-peer networking stack that vendors may use to customize, you know, whatever, and nobody really did. And this one is definitely, it's like they sat down at a computer and booted it up and said, let's change this, let's fix this, you know? So yeah, I definitely see that as kind of like, okay, my computer's installed now, what do I have on my desktop? And the taskbar is a big thing that's changed. And while I'm babbling about the taskbar, I just can't get enough of that, what do they call it, the arrow peak? The taskbar now has those kind of grouped little icons at the bottom, and when you mouse over them, you get a, you know, it shows the window on the screen, and then you mouse over the next, and you get the next one. And it's just, it's kind of like the idea of the whatever they, what do they call that on Mac with the little bouncing stuff at the bottom? The dock? The something? But it's kind of like that, but not as annoying with the little bouncing guys down there, and it actually, like, it seems really useful. Like when you mouse over them, you really like it's actually kind of fun to use. So I'm really liking that.
I don't have that experience because I installed it on a virtual PC, so I don't think I get the full screen previews when I mouse over. But I haven't been a big fan of the taskbar just yet. It still sort of strikes me as odd. And maybe again it's because I'm running in a virtual PC, so I don't really see the subtle distinction between just the icon of something that isn't running versus something that's actually running on the desktop as yet.
It is a little weird, and it's definitely much more Mac-like to have this sort of blended launcher slash taskbar. I haven't used it a ton, but there's definitely some things about it that I'm really, really digging. Like, John, you mentioned being able to see the previews, which is slick. I think you can even get some of that without having glass enabled. But the fact that like there's these little like shortcuts that I think in hindsight are obvious to add. Like you can, you know how you can alt tab through, you know, applications? Well, you can in Windows 7 you can alt tab within one particular application if it has multiple windows open. So for example, if you've got five words, you know, open, or five visuals, use Visual Studios, for example, you got five Visual Studios open, you can just alt-tab through the Visual Studios and not have to alt-tab through the 50 other windows that you have open, which is like, that's awesome to me. That's like a total productivity enhancement for me right there. Some people will probably like this, some people probably won't, but when you have multiple tabs in IE, not that I use IE really, but when you have multiple tabs in IE, those are surfaced in Explorer, so it doesn't show up as one IE window anymore. It shows up in the stack as if you had multiple IE windows open. I don't know. So there's a lot of little things like that that are just like, wow, somebody really kind of thought about what are some of the ways we can improve, you know, the interaction and make it slightly more productive. Another one that I really liked is that if you have multiple windows open and it shows you the stack of the windows that are open, you get and you hover your mouse over the each one, it gives you a little X so you can close the window right from the list of windows instead of having to right click on it and say close. So anyway, I'm definitely finding some stuff that I'm really digging about some of the changes to Explorer.
And I'm comparing this to a Vista machine that I've been running for, I guess, over a year. So, of course, that's experiencing bit rot and should probably be paved soon. But it definitely felt like it booted up and was more responsive a lot faster than Vista ever was.
I had the same experience. Yeah, it seems like with Vista, like, and I, you know, when I've installed Vista before and I was like, what on earth is going on? And I would run FileMon and RegMon and process it, and, you know, and I was just kind of amazed with how many background processes were running to just do all kinds of stuff. And it seems like with this, they've really kind of tamed that. So, you know, you still, like, they still have the searchable interface and all that in Explorer, but it doesn't seem like it's indexing all the time. That's definitely nice. Another thing just is the whole, like, you know, we talked about the desktop, but the Explorer has been changed too. Like, they've got this whole libraries idea, which seems like they've kind of been converging on that for a while. Like, Vista was a halfway step from the, you know, my documents and my computer and all that to a, you know, it's like C users and documents and photos, and but libraries is like that, but I guess is a little bit more like it includes searched locations and that kind of thing. So overall, I'm liking the Explorer a little bit more. I don't, Kevin?
Yeah, I think libraries are great. I mean, it's, you know, they sort of had this search folders concept in Vista, which I never really used, but you know, libraries I could definitely see using. I tend to spread my data around a bit on my drive, and not just keep it all in documents. So being able to sort of group together common things and have it really easily accessible is a win as far as I'm concerned.
Well, so far we've kind of liked everything. Do you guys have anything you dislike or that you'd like to see more of? Nope, ship it.
I mean, I haven't used it long enough to really come across, you know, anything that annoys me yet. I'm sure that will happen. There's no way that it won't. Actually, the one thing that I'm uncertain of is the automatic docking, window docking stuff. I think I'm going to have to play around with that a little bit to know for sure. But it seems like that could get a little irritating if it's not done exactly right. For example, like they have a feature where if you drag the window title to the top of the screen, it automatically maximizes the window. Like, I don't need that feature personally. Double clicking on the title bar already gave me that. I didn't really need anything else. And you know, if it's not done exactly right, it's going to be really easy to to accidentally sort of dock things in the wrong place, or you know, maximize them when you don't mean to, or you know, things like that. So that's one I'm going to keep an eye on, but it hasn't been an issue for me yet.
Okay, Scott?
Well, I'm still not sure about the taskbar. Maybe that'll grow on me, but they can always make things faster. You can never have an operating system that's not fast enough. The one thing I wish they would update or concentrate on is the actual Windows Explorer. So bringing that up to look at files on a folder, it just feels very cumbersome to me still. And a lot of times I'll still drop into the command line just to move files around and things like that. I wish there were ways to open up like split views inside of one window, just make it easier to navigate around the drive.
Yeah. There was one interesting thing when, as far as kind of side-by-side stuff or copying from one to another, which seems like maybe good, but is going to throw some people off, is the, I guess you can, what is it, shift-click or control-click? Just a second. You can shift-click on a taskbar icon, and it'll open another instance of the same app. So if you have Notepad or whatever, or say you have Explorer, and then you shift-click on it, and it'll open another one. Middle-clicking will do the same thing. And I don't know if that's good or bad or if that helps, but, you know, with that and then the ability to dock, maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. I haven't really done enough to notice.
Yeah, that shift-click one seems like a little odd to me. I'm not really sure how important that one is to me. I mean, it's not really something I see myself doing a ton of, but I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about that. It definitely seems like a lot of the stuff, I mean, I learned a lot of this stuff from Tim Snee's blog post that you mentioned. A lot of the stuff is not particularly discoverable. Like, you got to read how to do this stuff, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but there seems to be a lot of these like little tweaks that you're just never going to find on your own, and it really is, you're really going to have to be taught.
Yeah. Like, for instance, I mean, this kind of goes back to with Vista, you could shift right-click on files or things in Explorer, and you would get a whole bunch more options. And I use that quite a bit, but it's something where, I mean, you had to read it somewhere to know about it, and this definitely seems like that. It also, I think, Kevin, you were talking about this earlier, that they're just going to town with the Windows key. There's Windows space and Windows everything, you know, Windows 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 to select items off the taskbar. And, you know, pretty much if you hit Windows and, you know, just slap your hand on your keyboard, you're going to get some magic thing. I don't know if that's good. I guess it's good. But again, it's the kind of stuff where it's like people will just have to read it somewhere and decide they like it or don't.
Yeah, it's... I mean, and I think it's actually good because, you know, they haven't as far as I know, haven't really changed which Windows keys, you know, the set of standard set of Windows keys since like Windows 95. I mean, I think they've been missing out on some stuff. So I actually do think it's good. And I think, you know, there was a time when a lot of there's a transitional time when a lot of people still didn't have Windows keys on their keyboards, especially laptops. Like for a long time, IBM like totally resisted putting the Windows keys on their laptop for some stupid reason. But I think we've gotten past that point in most modern hardware. So being able to take advantage of it, I think, is a good thing. Some of these things, you know, it kind of makes me laugh because some of the things that people are describing, like the Windows 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, are in Vista. In fact, even a couple of Tim's things are that, you know, that he has in his blog post are features that are in Vista that are just sort of obscure and people don't really know about. But they're coming up as like, hey, look, these are new Windows 7 features. I don't know what that's about. But
I was asking what everyone thought was their one thing that it was annoying. And I have to say, and I know this is a geek thing, but I just have to go back to that ISO mount thing. Because from the point of view of an IT guy or a developer setting up a machine, it was just really frustrating to, you know, I had this beautiful experience, installed everything, and then I'm like, okay, time to put Visual Studio on here. And when you download Visual Studio, you get an ISO. And I don't run around burning DVDs anymore. I just mount ISOs. And I mean, when I finally found Power ISO worked, that was great. But I went through about six different ISO mounters, and all of them caused different weird problems. So that was my biggest frustration. So, yeah.
I thought it was interesting that Word and Paint now have a ribbon in them. I actually thought it was kind of nice.
WordPad, you mean?
Yeah, sorry. WordPad and Paint.
Yes, and I mean, it's nice to see them kind of polishing off those apps. Of course, Notepad remains totally unchanged, as it will from now until the end of time. But
right. Which, you know,
unfortunately,
which
looks like...
The frustrating part is that they have – I can't blame this on a time lag. I just rudely interrupted you. But but the frustrating part is not that they're not changing Notepad completely. It's that they're not – they're still using Notepad. Like when you view source or something in Explorer, I think it still opens in Notepad. And, you know, like applications are still looking for Notepad. I mean, I think if for whatever legacy reasons they got to leave Notepad as it is, which I don't really know what those are, but they should at least not publicize Notepad and should really kind of push WordPad more, and they really haven't. Like, nobody uses WordPad that I know of. I mean, you kind of stumble onto it, but anyhow.
It's true, but one thing that I found very interesting is that WordPad can now... read docx files, can read Word 2007 files. So that's awesome. Now we have like a basic Word viewer built into Windows.
That's good.
I suspect I will be using it a lot more than I have in the past. Although it doesn't seem to support doc format, older Word format, which seems a bit odd. I'm sure it's probably a faster Word for just viewing files. So
it's interesting too that it also supports that open document format or ODF, ODT, whatever, you know, like all those open...
ODF, yeah.
Yeah. So, hopefully it's like a Swiss Army knife of opening documents, you know, like you don't have to download a viewer for most documents.
Back on the paint topic, they did, you know, it's nice that they gave it a facelift, so to speak, and put a ribbon on it. But as far as I can tell, they didn't actually enhance it functionally at all. I could be wrong about this, but doesn't look like they have support for transparency yet, which, you know, it makes it for modern graphics virtually worthless. So that's a bit disappointing that they didn't beef it up a little bit, or, you know, just bundle paint.net into the operating system, which is really what they need to do. But that's a different issue.
Well, they did. There are some minor changes to it, especially in the beta. There's like little shapes and clip arty kind of things. So like you can make a flow chart, you know, like you can get arrows and stars and that kind of thing. I mean, they're really kind of silly little shapes, but there's something there. So you could make a basic flow chart in Paint now. But, you know, that the whole thing about bundling paint.net is kind of interesting now, because if they, it seems like they almost could do something where they're pushing things through Windows Live, and I wonder if they could do something where they had a Windows Live partners, or, you know, and they, I think that they have less liability with downloaded applications. You know, there's not the whole problem of cease and desist and pull this, you know, pull all this inventory off the shelves and recall a bunch of DVDs and all that. It seems like they may be able to just kind of have some kind of add-ons and include, you know, an update, or, you know, like you could upsize to paint.net. That would be neat.
So we got to mention Calc. Calc has probably gotten the biggest facelift of any of the apps, any of the built-in apps in Windows. Have you guys played around with it?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, like, one thing is the conversions is just totally handy. You know, to say, like, how many days are between January 1, 1970 and January 1, 2085, and watch it go. It's the kind of things that I've always kind of gone to Google and said, what are 4 gallons and milliliters, you know, but it's nice to be able to do that within the calculator now. So anyone else? Calc?
I love it. It's awesome.
Well, I guess the different views and stuff are nice too. Like, they have before I think they had 2 modes. They had basically like a scientific and a basic, and now they have like a programmer's calculator and a, what's the other? I think they have a financial.
Statistics.
That's it. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, you've always kind of looked at, like, a calculator is almost a bit of a Hello World application, you know, and it's something you expect. It's to make a really nice calculator is a little difficult, but it's something you'd expect to find on a decent, you know, anything. I mean, I've got a calculator that ships with my phone, so you'd expect it when you buy an operating system. So it's nice to see, like, an actual usable calculator that's got some features in it. I mean, the one before was really kind of pretty embarrassing, especially even when you look at, like, you open up Visual Studio and you just look at what the controls are and you think, like, how long would it take to build a better calculator, you know, or a notepad or whatever.
I remember what I was talking about earlier. It was the Problem Steps Recorder. Has anyone played with that little application?
I haven't.
It's another one of those apps that's hard to find. If you go into the start menu and just type psr.exe, it'll go out and find it. I think there's a way to get to it through the control panel too. But what you can do is tell it to start recording and then start navigating through an application. You can pause and create annotations and then basically save everything as a zip file and send it off to somebody. And now you have a nice screen recording of something that went wrong on the computer. So it's kind of slick to be built in.
Yeah, I think it's actually really cool, and I can definitely see how it's going to be useful. I mean, it gives you both a series of screenshots and a sort of textual description of what the person did. You know, they clicked on this button, etc. And you know, bundles it up, creates it as an MHT, and zips it up. And yeah, you know, I think it'll be a great tech support for the parents, you know, kind of tool too, where I can see what they're doing instead of them having to describe it to me.
And I believe that's what they're using inside the send feedback thing. When you run the beta, pretty much every window in the upper right has a send feedback link. And from what you're describing, that sounds like exactly pretty close to the experience you get, where it'll, you know, capture the steps you did and screenshots and that kind of thing. So, yep, nice.
I wish they'd do some more with remote desktop. Like, I opened up a couple remote desktops from Windows 7, and it didn't feel like it had changed very much. I wish they'd give the ability to just bring over one application from a remote machine.
They do have that in with Windows Server Terminal Services, I believe, with 2008.
Ah.
Where you can, you know, sort of remote into one app. But yeah, it's not built into Windows client stuff, I think.
When you do that, do you get like a window on your desktop that looks like it's an application, but it's running on that other machine?
I think so. I've never actually used it, but that's sort of my recollection. It's sort of a variation on the Unity, whatever it's called in VMware or whatever, you know, where you mm-hmm. or sort of hosting a remote application on your desktop as if it was a local app.
Another place that they do that is And Linux, which lets you run Linux applications on your desktop. And it's basically like, you know, virtualizing an entire Linux instance and then just shows the one window, which is kind of slick. Yeah, I agree. That should be, it seems like they're starting to make more use of the virtualization. Like, for instance, while they don't support ISO mounting, they do support these VHDs. And if you go into the disk management, you can say create a new virtual disk and it creates a new VHD file. And you can say I'd like a dynamic disk expanding up to 16 gigs and put it on my whatever drive. And it just creates a VHD file the same as you'd see in a virtual PC or virtual server instance. So that's kind of cool. It looks like they're moving towards that. I don't know if, since this is the beta, I don't know if we'll see anything more along that lines. But I mean, it would be nice if there was, you know, if it was more just kind of integrated in. I mean, like that they went further with it. For instance, like, they bought a company a while ago called Softricity, and they have a product called SoftGrid. And SoftGrid allows virtualizing a single application. So instead of sandboxing an entire operating system, it sandboxes just one app. And it kind of virtualizes registry and COM lookups and, you know, whatever kind of stuff. And I'd like to see that more moved into the core operating system. I think that would be neat.
They seem to be holding that back for their enterprise customers.
Yep. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Like, after reading the announcements, I'm like, great, this is going to be in, you know, Vista or Vista whatever soon. It's going to be out there. And then I started reading all the, you know, Softricity stuff on the Microsoft sites, and it was all like enterprise-y, used for application push and that kind of stuff. So
what do you guys think about the, I don't have the hardware to play around with this, but, you know, one of the big things that they're introducing with Windows 7 is, you know, touchscreen support and multi-touch support in the operating system. You guys have any interest in that? Does it do anything for you?
Only on my phone.
I'm definitely interested. I'd like to see some of the kind of hacks. Like, I think that, you know, people are coming at this from the top end of, you know, like $15,000 Surface computers and, you know, whatever $1,000 touchscreens. And I'd like to see some of the kind of smarts of, like, these, you know, I've played with the Johnny Chung Lee thing where he's got the multi-touch using infrared reflectors. And it's not perfect, but I'd like to see that kind of stuff in there too. I don't know if that would integrate in, or, you know, if their interface would let that happen. But I guess I'd be interested in multi-touch eventually if prices come down, but I'd love to be able to have some kind of $50 hookup on my monitor today where I could start playing with it.
Do you feel like you have a real, you know, daily practical use for touchscreen stuff?
Well, I that's hard to say. And I don't know if any of us can really make a good decision on that because we haven't done it. Like, if you ask people, you know, 40 or 30 years ago or whatever, if they'd use a mouse, they'd kind of laugh at you, maybe, because, you know, they're just used to working on a keyboard. And I know for art things, working in Blend and things like that, there's just some frustrating things where I'm fighting with my mouse and I'm like, no, right there. I know on the screen where I want to go. Just do it, you know? So I can see some things like that. And I could also see some things where, like, you use a stylus on the screen. So, you know.
A light pen?
A light pen. Whatever happened to light pens?
I don't know.
I remember my dad bought a K-Pro a long time ago, and I argued with him because I wanted an Apple II, but we got a K-Pro, and it had a light pen hookup, and I'm like, oh, they must be coming along any day now. We never got them. But, yeah. I'd like a light pen.
So here's a question. Do you think Microsoft should have distributed this beta using BitTorrent?
Yes.
Yeah, based on what happened to their website, yeah.
So a different question is, why don't they distribute using BitTorrent? I mean, let me throw out a rhetorical or straw man argument, but I think maybe there's the feeling that, you know, BitTorrent is illegal, and if you're using BitTorrent, you know, that's for pirated stuff. And I think that the majority of BitTorrent downloads are, but I've distributed plenty of stuff over BitTorrent that was perfectly legal, you know, And there are other operating, like a lot of Linux distributions are distributed over. So I don't know.
Their allergy to BitTorrent feels a lot like their allergy to open source to me. It's like they have this irrational fear. Other people are doing it, but somehow Microsoft like just can't get over it somehow. You know, they have a phobia, and they haven't gotten past it yet. I suspect they will at some point. One would hope that when they, you know, having seen what a friggin' disaster it was with this beta, that somebody, you know, lights are going off somewhere in Redmond and saying, maybe we should think about this other option. But who knows if that's actually happening.
I think there's a fear they'd be giving legitimacy to this technology that they feel is a bit seedy, I'm guessing. You know, and I have a feeling that there's been a couple executives that go out and try to investigate BitTorrent, and then they picture, you know, Windows 7 beta right up there with Girls Gone Wild and Big Boob Mamas or something like that.
Now that would be a bad thing?
Right. Yeah, and so I know that at one point they had a different technology, which was, you know, Microsoft BitTorrent, which was called Avalanche. And they actually used that for a bit. You could download the one of the betas, Beta 2 to Visual Studio 2008, was distributed over mm-hmm. Avalanche. So, you know, whether, you know, because they're Microsoft, they have to build their own, or whether they distribute over BitTorrent. And I think that, too, I don't know, for some reason, maybe they would think that distributing over BitTorrent would compromise the applications or let Windows be pirated more. I think that's a misunderstanding. I mean, if an ISO is an ISO, and, you know, regardless of how it's distributed, then, you know, if people distribute keys or something, they'll do that regardless.
Well, the ridiculous thing about that is that it's being distributed over BitTorrent anyways. It's just right. Not them doing it.
I think, too, you know, they're paying, I don't know what their cost was, but so they paid, you know, how many, whatever terabytes did they distribute with, you know, millions of downloads of a 2 to 3 gig download. And I don't know how much they pay Akamai or whoever for that, but I mean, that's got to be some money, you know. And it's just, it's bizarre that if they used a peer-to-peer download system, they would pay almost nothing, because once it's out there, the more people downloading, the lower their hosting costs are. So I don't know. I mean, my tiny little brush with BitTorrent hosting, we had this mono distribution, and we distributed a 400 megabyte ISO, and you know, it was kind of a little difficult because they didn't. There's a site out there now called Legal Torrents, and they actually host, like, they'll seed the torrent, which is nice. But so we had to constantly seed the torrent and that kind of stuff. But I don't know how many terabytes we distributed. It was a lot, you know, tens of thousands of downloads of a 400 megabyte ISO. And, you know, we did it off a $5 a month hosting account, and people got quick downloads because we were using BitTorrent. So, and, you know, we didn't, I mean, it was nowhere near the level that Microsoft was dealing with the Windows 7 downloads, but there's no reason it couldn't have scaled to, you know, millions of downloads. And, you know, theoretically that would have done better than the Windows 7 distribution did. So
I guess my only other disappointment with Windows 7 is that every time I click on the Internet Explorer icon, I expect to see something new and fantastic, but it's still just Internet Explorer.
Well, have you been running IE8?
I have been running the beta, yeah.
Okay.
A little bit.
So, I mean, maybe to people that have been running IE7, it's going to be a new surprise.
Could be. I don't know. To me, Internet Explorer is just, I don't know. I've been, for the last week, actually, I've been using Chrome almost exclusively.
Yeah, I've been kind of forcing myself to run like a little browser testing lab. So on two computers side by side, I've got Chrome and IE8. And then both of them have Firefox. And that was helpful when I was, you know, for testing websites I was developing. But it's also been just kind of nice to keep up with them. So I think I'm just so used to IE8 that, you know, it's like, okay, here it is, same thing on you know, on Windows 7.
So have you guys looked at any of the Windows 7 API stuff? You know, what's there for programmers that's unique to Windows 7?
I haven't.
Oh, I did a little bit, and I actually have forgotten almost everything that I looked at. I'm trying to remember where I saw this. There was something that jumped out at me that seemed interesting. Where was that? Oh, I know what it was. There was a, and I guess maybe it wasn't someone's blog. It might have been like a Channel 9 interview where someone was talking about the animations that are in Windows 7. It almost sounded as if there was something similar to Silverlight's Visual State Manager that's inside of Windows 7. And it's not that you can declaratively describe an animation like you can in Silverlight with XAML, but there's an API available in Win7 where you can describe what you want an animation to do through a series of API calls, and then Windows can just go off and take care of things for you. I thought that was interesting. It's called the Scenic Animation Platform, and it's a COM API, but I imagine eventually that'll bubble up. Of course, WPF might have its own thing, so eventually. I heard WPF was supposed to get a visual state manager, so this might not be a big deal, but I thought it was interesting that that's sort of finally baked into Windows when, you know, I had a Texas Instruments 99.4a that had a, you know, sprite command.
I forget who it was, but somebody was looking at, I mean, it's not a surprise, but somebody was looking at the taskbar. I thought that was you, Kevin. Was looking at the taskbar API and was saying, like, oh, great. You know, it's all COM and C++. And, I mean, it's not a surprise, but it's like someday it would be nice to see some managed APIs for some of this stuff. You know, the rumor is that the version after Windows 7 is going to be more of a managed operating system. And maybe it'll be then. Maybe they'll surprise us with something in Windows 7. But so far it's all just... You know, it's the same. It's polish on top of, you know, the COM and C++ stuff.
Yeah, that continues to be a disappointment. I mean, not terribly surprising. That seems to be their, you know, they've set that stake in the ground. But yeah, a little unfortunate. I do hope that they, you know, there's this thing called the Windows Bridge Project, which is essentially a open sourcey project by Microsoft to provide managed interfaces to native Windows APIs that don't otherwise have managed, you know, interfaces as part of the .NET framework. So I don't know how many people are really using that. It's something I've always kind of kept an eye on, but I've never really had the need to use. But hopefully they'll, you know, carry that forward and keep expanding it to support the Windows 7 stuff. One thing that, just a minor thing that's kind of interesting, is that the ribbon control, it looks like, is actually been promoted to be a real Windows Win32 common control. You know, it's in the operating system now. So, you know, just a little tidbit. Clearly, they intend that to be a real, you know, primary interface on Windows. Where for a long time there, it was like the Office interface and nowhere else.
Well, you know, speaking of that, is there any WPF in Windows 7? I don't think there is.
I don't know.
Which is interesting. I don't know. That's
Wasn't some of the Media Center stuff written in, maybe not WPF, maybe it was just managed code.
It was in managed code. So far, Media Center was just, it was in C#, but it was managed code, and it was kind of, it predated some of the WPF stuff. And then the Zune software also was in C#, and it had some kind of WPF-y sort of stuff, but if you looked into it, it was running all its own kind of windowing stuff. And the reason I bring up Zune is because the Media Center app inside of Windows 7 looks more like Zune software, but it's not. But I don't know if any of that's using WPF either.
Well, I'm going to find out. And And as far as I can tell, MS Core EE isn't loaded into any Windows processes that I'm launching.
Yeah.
So it's not WordPad, not Paint, or anything like this. Because I found a ZDNet blog entry where a guy was claiming that WordPad was now built with WPF. That was based on someone who had installed an early Windows 7 build, but I think they were just saying that because it looked different. Doesn't look like it's loaded in there at all. Right.
Oh, it's got a ribbon. It must be WPF.
Just like Word.
Yeah, exactly. Office is WPF, right?
Yep.
I think the first major WPF using application is going to be Visual Studio.
Hmm.
It seems like. I mean, it's not completely
aside
rewritten.
From expression.
Well, yeah, expression. That's true. Blend and expression. All right. So that's it for this first look at Windows 7.
Oh, we didn't mention jump lists.
Dang it! What are jump lists? Actually, I'm still recording, so just talk about jump. What's a jump list?
Well, I don't understand all the implications of them yet, but it's sort of an extension of the system menu where you right click on an application or on a start menu icon, and the app can present a set of common actions or, you know, appropriate actions. I haven't dug into them, but it sort of struck me as the application extendable version of the system menu. So you can, you know, really quickly jump to a particular, like you can show the MRU list on there and really easily open another document or, you know, stuff like that. It's one of those terms that like just kind of jumps out at me, the jump list.
All right, so that's it for this first look at Windows 7 on Herding Code. Go get those ISOs. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.